What is the best way to introduce a friend or family member to Alaska? If you tell them too much, they won't believe you. The place is just too different. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. I'm sure the tourist promotions do their job fairly well, but what about the Alaska we all know that lies beyond the tourist track? What do you tell them? 1-800-478-8255, 478-8255. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. Do they have to find it out the hard way on Talk of Alaska statewide?
Today's program is underwritten in part by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. A PFD reminder, check the status of your 2011 PFD application with My PFD Info online at pfd.alaska.gov. You can view or change your voluntary deductions until Wednesday, August 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
And we're bound to have some controversial opinions on this one. It's Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about what do you tell somebody who hasn't been to Alaska to enable them to actually enjoy their time here. And, you know, it would have been really easy to bring on panelists who would help us all take cheap shots at the dumb things that tourists say. We all enjoy playing that game. And Talk of Alaska, this time of year, you know, as the tourist season sort of starts winding down, now's the time that maybe we get a little tired of them, and we're more than happy to start telling those tales of the dumb things that they ask and the dumb things that they do. But I'd like to try and get beyond that this time to the question of, let's say it's someone that you really care about. It's a family member or someone like that. They're coming to Alaska, and the question is, how do you perform an introduction for them that will help them really enjoy their experience? You know, certain things are just basic, you know, like you can say you need to allow more time than you think you need. You need to bring more money than you think you need to bring. You know, there's a few things like that are basic. You know, things are different here. Things are bigger here. There's not a road to everywhere. And little things like that. Those are the easy ones. But then there's the harder ones of, how do you actually have an experience you're going to enjoy? What are the things that you want to do to prepare? And then I was thinking, you know, If we get a really nice, juicy show, you can just basically provide the link over the internet in this day of internet to whatever your relatives are that are coming up and say, here, just listen to this radio show. And in this case, you can even watch it on 360 North. We welcome our new camera to the studio and say hello to our television viewers on the cable television system of Alaska. Well, I am joined by a born and raised Alaskan, now retired and living in Squim, Washington, Vernita Herdman. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Vernita.
Thanks, Steve. I'm really happy to be here.
For those of you, and I'm sure there are a number of listeners who already know you, but maybe you could just give a little bit of sketch of who you are. I mean, I guess you're best known for your involvement with WorldCap, but I mean, you had a history before that. I remember when I met you, you were running the Association for Stranded Rural Alaskans, trying to do something about people that would come in from the villages and get stuck in the city.
I think you've got to be mixed up with someone else.
Yeah? You didn't
that
do that?
Sounds like Audrey Armstrong or somebody. I was born in Unalakleet. My parents were Irene and Stanton Kachertag. And I always feel somewhat fortunate because my earliest memories are of living in Anchorage in the 50s. My parents moved there to work so that they could buy materials for a house. I was born in a log cabin that housed nine of us for about 10 years. And we moved back to Unalakleet when I was in the first grade. And we lived there for another 10 years. Until my parents moved back to Anchorage in the 60s, this time so they could work to get material to build a cabin up on the Unalakleet River. And I never did really go back to Unalakleet to live except for a few months or a year at the most. And lived in Anchorage before I moved to Squim the last 25 years of our time up there. I worked at Rural Cap, and I was a community development organizer and director of the Natural Resources and Subsistence Department at a time when a lot of the really important cases involving subsistence and sovereignty were coming to a head, and had the privilege of working closely with tribes, not only in Alaska, but people who wanted to help us from tribes here in the lower 48. And as a result, I've had probably a better opportunity than a lot of people to travel throughout Alaska, but also pretty much throughout Indian country here in the lower 48 and in Canada and even Greenland. So I feel very lucky in that respect. The other thing I wanted to add also is I feel like what helped me communicate the needs of tribes and to kind of tiptoe through some of the politics was the fact that I lived in Chicago as a young wife from 1969 to 1974 and got a really on-the-ground look at Midwest America. And I feel like that experience helped me to translate not only the Inupiaq and Alaska Native cultural way of life to non-natives, but also to translate the kind of Middle America way of thinking to tribal leaders. And okay. I think that that helped the dialogue quite a bit.
It probably did. And it's a work in progress, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's say you have a close friend down there in Squim, and they've never been to Alaska, and they come to me and they say, Renita, you're from Alaska. I'm thinking about taking a trip up there. What do you think I ought to do? And, you know, obviously you're going to say, well, are you going to go on a cruise ship? Are you going to fly up there? How long are you going to spend? Those kind of questions. But what do you think it's really important to... You know, somebody that you really want to have a good, positive experience in Alaska, what kind of advice would you come up with for them?
I've been asked that quite a bit, and I usually tell them, regardless of what they're doing, whether they're with an organized cruise or whatever, I tell them, get off the ship, get out of Anchorage. If they have the funds, I urge them to rent a car, you know, from either Anchorage or Fairbanks and tell them it's impossible to get lost in Alaska and just to, you know.
You can ask, you know, I think that's one of the big things is a little bit different than in the lower 48. You can just ask.
Yeah. Right.
Well, we got this, you know, we put this out on Facebook and got all these great comments. This is one that's kind of interesting for new residents. Although there's a lot of racism still in Alaska, the native cultures are strong and getting stronger. Be respectful and take the time to learn about them and what subsistence culture is all about. For new visitors, most residents kill animals and put them in their freezer. There are various phrases to describe Alaska vegetarians that may be vegetarian in the States, but put up wild game and fish up here. Yes, you can use, and I have a long list of other expectations to discuss, too. Kendra, you're welcome to call. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Okay, Vernita, why don't you get us kind of launched? I know you've got a few tales to tell.
My husband's people are from New York, and so we've had a few visits. However, his sister has lived in Alaska well over 50 years, and so the burden hasn't been entirely on us. But I do recall taking people from Connecticut and New York State on a trip that should have taken us a day or two at the most to Dawson, using the top of the world highway. But it just turned into what I thought was a disaster. Our van broke down on the way to pick them up at Mount McKinley National Park. So we ended up having to spend the night there, which most people wouldn't complain about. And then we drove from there to Fairbanks, where we put our van in the shop and rented another van and started our trip to Dawson. What we didn't know was the tires were rotten on that van.
Whoa.
There wasn't a spare. We didn't know that. You don't check a spare when you rent a car.
You don't have one.
Well, it didn't have a spare, and we had 3 flat tires in less than 24 hours. one of them in Dawson, one on the way to Dawson, and one coming back from Dawson. And the wives were fuming, but the men, oh my goodness, they were in charge of, you know, taking whatever tire had gone flat to the nearest community and coming back with a good tire. And they did that 3 times. And every time they came back, they were a little merrier. I think beer might have played a part in the thing. It was 85 degrees, so the weather was perfect. But I learned something. The guys were just in their element. They were talking about how this was the Alaska that they had heard about. Hardships, you know, in the late 1990s in Alaska. And we also learned some local stuff. We had to go through Chicken, top of the world, highway. And they came back because we had a flat tire outside Chicken. They had to go into Chicken. They came back and they were full of information. George told us, the guy from Connecticut, he said, I had no idea. Did you know that there's an upper Chicken, a lower Chicken, and a Chicken proper? I didn't know that.
No, me either. That's all new information to me.
Apparently their host, the one that picked them up when they were hitchhiking back to Chicken, was a German national who comes to Chicken every summer to help out his friends by watching the bar and lodge or whatever else they have there. And they got most of their information from a non-Alaskan.
Well, of course.
Anyway, that trip wasn't what we had hoped for, but it certainly was memorable. We've had other very non-eventful trips. My daughter's in-laws are from Michigan, and we took them to, or we went along with Jory and her husband, and we went into Mount McKinley National Park. And that I would highly recommend to people, because what I have found is you don't get far talking about what Alaska is. The best thing to do is just to let people experience it with as little talking as possible. And if you let the scenery do the talking, you can't lose. We took them into the park, and it just blew everybody away. There were passages on that road where the whole bus, you know, you have to park, drive in and park, and then you take a bus. There were parts of that trip where the whole bus was just silent, because there's not a whole lot you can say about how beautiful the land is. But there were other parts where people were rushing to the windows, thought the bus was going to turn over, because we saw caribou and we saw can't remember. I think we might have seen a wolf or two. No bears. But let the scenery do the talking.
Well, one thing that I always get upset about is that they all want to see. They have like a checklist of wildlife they want to see. Well, I've seen a bear now. I got to find a moose. It's like, you know, I don't. It's just not the way to take aim at Alaska is to come with a list of wildlife that you want to see. I haven't seen a bald eagle yet.
On the other hand, we go to New York City and we have our list. You know, you want to see Rockefeller Center and Statue of Liberty and Central Park.
I understand that.
Subway.
I understand that, but there's a matter of just being selective. You know, I mean, each wildlife has a different habitat, and you're gonna, you know, you have to go some miles, to reach the habitat of some other animal. I was up in Hatcher Pass this spring, and it was still like not quite spring up there, and was staying at the Hatcher Pass Lodge and talking to this fella in there who comes up there every year, and it turns out he's like a bird guide, and he's like for people that are life listing their birds, he can find them certain birds up in Alaska that are really hard to find, and that's what he was doing up there. He was up there because it was still not quite spring, and he was looking to see which kinds of birds were coming up there when. You know, as it was a business thing for him. And I just think that this is, you know, that is the level to which it can easily go. I mean, there are people, for instance, that absolutely have to pay all that money to fly out to the Pribilofs so that there are certain birds that they can check off. I think in some ways that's a good thing. But just this idea, I'm going to Alaska, so therefore I have to see a grizzly bear and a moose and a whale. And, you know, that's not the right approach somehow. That's the way it seems to me.
I think that's part of it, though. When you're running into family and friends, you can't really pick and choose in terms of compatibility. You're going to get the weirdo. At least in my family.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's one of the things I would do is not encourage people to come with a list of things. But on the other hand,
That's where the communication before they get up here is when you put in these consumer warnings.
Right. Right. And you know, certainly an important one is it's going to be more expensive than you think.
Yes.
Places are further away than you think. You know, these are all really, important ones to get across. But, it's those subtler ones that I'm more concerned about. Is how can you really enjoy your experience? I think what is odd is as I was talking to people about how to theme out this show, often... People said that they had friends that they tried to help have a positive experience in Alaska, and they still, you know, had problems with bugs or getting across rivers or not having the right gear or being cold at night or not realizing that it doesn't get dark, all these different things. And yet most of them said, you know, when they got done, they still said it was one of the best experiences of their lives. So I think we do have that.
Absolutely.
And even in your case, in that crazy nightmarish drive up there to Dawson City, what'd they say when it was over?
I think they lived off of, we used to tell people that I think that George went to dinner off that trip for a long, long time.
Right.
He's still telling those stories. And his friend from Rome, New York, I'm sure Joe, is doing the same thing.
Yep.
You talked about wanting to make Alaska positive for people you care about, but I think one of the sports that people may or may not talk about very often in Alaska is what do you do for people that you not only don't care about, but people that you have very negative attitudes toward. And, you know, exposing them to bugs and cold nights, that's pretty much what you do, and watch them swarm like butterflies on a board.
I'm loving it, Vernita. I'm loving it.
That's human nature.
Watch them twist in the wind.
That's right.
1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. What are the things, you know, like making a list, the top 10, let's say, or whatever, that you believe you would really like people that come to Alaska to know before they get here? And here's a few that came in over the internet. Jeremy says, they should know that five vehicles backed up means pull over. Mary says, I wish new residents knew how to drive in the snow. Yes, you can use that. Debbie, a proprietor of a shop, says, I wish new residents were required to drive the Alcan so they understand how far we are from manufacturers and suppliers and might then understand why things cost more. I'm tired of having them walk into my shop and comment on how much cheaper they can buy something back home. And Daryl throws this one in. You'll appreciate this. This is one you relate to, Vernita. I just hope they remember how to get home.
Oh, jeez. Absolutely. What's scary is when you're trying to give them a negative experience and they just get more and more excited, and then they start talking about moving to Alaska. Like,
oh, no.
Okay.
What have I created? Self-mythologizing. Well, you know, I'll have to say that, you know, Anchorage, downtown Anchorage tends to be kind of a tourist destination in the summertime. And, you know, Anchorage residents, longtime Anchorage residents, tend to know this. And tend to avoid downtown unless they want to have a certain kind of experience.
Right.
But, you know, from time to time, I'll have to admit, if I'm, you know, looking the way I do with all my gray hair and all that, I can be sitting in some downtown establishment, and these tourists are looking at me and asking questions, and the temptation is almost irresistible. You know, just, you know, I try to resist it, but I mean, just to play the old time sourdough, you know, pretty soon I'm chasing the bears away and working my mining claim. And
kind of reminds me of this guy from home. He was part of the, I put this in quotes, homeless population up there. I think he went there on vacation, away from subsistence for a while. But his favorite thing to do in the summertime was to kind of loll beside a building in the sun. And the tourists would come and they'd take pictures, and they wouldn't try to talk to him. They treated him like kind of, you know, if you're homeless, you're not. But they would take pictures. And whenever they did that, he would wait until they had continued down the street. And then he would get up and run after them, and he would pull them on the sleeve, and he'd say, who are you, and why?
and take their picture.
Yeah, whatever.
We're talking about what people coming to Alaska really need to know. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. It's statewide. If you're calling from Anchorage, you can dial 550-8422. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. And Leanie joins the program from the Valley. How you doing, Leanie?
Hi, Steve. Hi. I'm doing great, thanks. I would like for people to know before they come to Alaska a couple of things. Nothing is as it seems. That's a brochure that you're looking at. And the other thing is that you can accomplish a lot of things besides doing the standard tourist attractions, which are great for some people, but there's more to Alaska than gold and the history of gold and the history of mining for gold. And there's a lot more out there to see. And so that's kind of, I'm a freelance tour guide and a personal tour guide, and that's the thing that people seem to be surprised about the most, that everything isn't based on gold mines. And even with the oil today, it's amazing how much people still on the whole gold thing and the Klondike. And there's just more to it than that.
Well, you know, it's a We're kind of prisoners of our own image, I think. I mean, Alaska is colonial in a lot of different ways. Like, the fishing industry is sort of the colony of Seattle or Norway or Japan. And whatever industry you pick, we're kind of a colony. And we're sort of imprisoned in the imagery that whatever the cruise industry and so forth have put out about us. And now with this reality TV, I think it might even be getting worse.
In the wintertime, when I'm outside, I do an Alaska show, but it's not with tin cans and about gold mines. It's about everyday Alaskans that live here today and the things that they go through living in a place of such extreme. It's stories about people who have grown up here and are still alive here, and so it's everyday Alaskan stories, and people really appreciate knowing that there are trials and tribulations, but the thing that we always end the show with is that we understand that our everyday drudgery is the stuff of other people's dreams, and that's kind of an interesting balance for us to be in a lot of the time, because what we take for granted up here, people spend their entire lives saving for, to see the midnight sun once.
I'm so glad you called, because I think that is absolutely true. And while you're on the line there, Leni, I want to kind of put in a plug for the guides and the outfitters. I know that you have different kinds of travelers. You know, you've got, when you say seasoned traveler, you often think you're referring to somebody that knows their way around hotels and airports and things like that. But there's also the matter of being a traveler that really knows how to find the flavor of a place. And what I've discovered as someone who has done quite a lot of traveling is that often you really want to go to a local person. Maybe you want to get a guide that can really ease the way for you and let you take maximum advantage of your limited amount of time and resources that you have.
Most definitely. And I mean, there's a lot of different types of vacations, but I found personally that the idea of talking to locals is the number one thing that every tourist I've ever taken around the state wanted to do, something with the locals, hang with Alaskans, sit at a campfire, you know, really, really basic stuff. And the other comment I'll say real quick before I go is, Steve, you really need to do a show sometime where we can call up and just tell good tourism stories.
Right. Well, I was very tempted. I was very tempted to make that the theme today. But I knew I was going to go there anyway.
Well, we have some, I tell you. And the quick one I'll give you is when a bunch of Portuguese women get off the plane thinking that they're getting a fluent Spanish guide, and a semi-fluent Spanish guide greets people thinking they are fluent in Spanish and doesn't speak a word of Portuguese. How do you spend the next 10 days? Well, you end up speaking three languages. That's what you do.
All right, Leni.
Sometimes three languages in one sentence, and so it was pretty interesting.
Well, I'm thinking we need to develop a world pigeon now so that we can, you know, wherever you go, you know, whether it's China or India or wherever, you still can manage to get by.
Thanks for the show.
All right. Thank you, Leni. Vernita? Okay. Oh, we lost. Okay. We'll get Vernita back and I guess take this opportunity to take a break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by Alaska Business Monthly, providing a source for statewide in-depth business news on Twitter at AK Business Month or Facebook.
Well, Vernita, you're back with us?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. We're talking about outsized visitor expectations of Alaska and seeing what our listeners have to say about what do you think people ought to be told before they come to Alaska. And, you know, our last caller, Leni, was pointing out that it's always a good thing to talk to locals. I'm sure you agree with that, Anita.
Absolutely.
Well, I wanted to, I like to watch people. And, I just kind of enjoy watching a whole family together and how they kind of look and move and act like one another. I just kind of enjoy that. And so I'm in my a bistro favored by the young in Anchorage, and kind of watching all the local people that I know that are there, but they've brought their relatives, you know, often parents, and watching the parents trying to adjust themselves to the place that their progeny hang out in. And some of them look like they absolutely cannot wait to get out of that place. they look so uncomfortable. And I'm thinking, you know, they need to learn how to relax. You know, what could be told to them to enable this to be less of a strained situation? Right. I brought this up to my friend Heather Lende, who's now a nationally known writer and lives in Haines. And she didn't see it the way I did. I saw it as the overprotective reflexes of the parents coming back, and they're worried for their kids with all the weirdness of Alaska around them. And she didn't see it that way at all. She says, I think it has a lot to do with family and human dynamics.
That was my thought.
Yeah, the kids have moved to Alaska from some lovely place like, say, Ohio, and their parents see Anchorage, or for that matter, Haines, as a step back, a place that might be interesting to visit, like, say, Africa, but not where any sane offspring of theirs would raise grandchildren.
I think what you're seeing is adjustment going on several levels. The parents are not only adjusting to what they see as Alaska, when in fact it's just Humpies or something, and they're trying to adjust because probably when they're back home in Ohio, their kids don't take them to the local Humpies or Humpies equivalent.
Yeah, the last thing they'd want to do.
And then there's a lot of showing off going on by the kids, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's their opportunity to make their parents even more worried. Wonderful.
Yeah. Heather goes on to say, the hardest thing to do is give them a reason to love it as much as we do in a week.
Yeah,
and you know, she used the word love, and I really like that, because I think, you know, for some people, they might arrive in Alaska as a visitor and they find that they can't leave because it got a hold on them.
Well, the old tourism bureau saying, once you've been to Alaska, you never quite go home again. I think it's true. I've known people who couldn't wait to get out of Alaska, go back home, wherever home was, and then coming back early from that trip because, you know, as they say, it's a zoo down there, and Alaska is not. Alaska is this wonderful place.
Yeah, Heather goes on to say, we've all kind of gotten used to the ugliness of the man-made Alaskan things. We know how to look up and beyond it all, but when family visit, they sometimes see the bad stuff we ignore. And it takes some prolonged exposure for them to appreciate the things that we just kind of routinely learn to ignore.
And then there's the fact, you know, as Ben Franklin said, he wasn't far off. He compared visitors to fish. Fish and visitors start to smell after 3 days.
Oh, that's almost a given. I mean that's the first thing is the ones that are scared to leave and then end up hanging around the house when you want to get out picking berries or whatever, and you know that they're good for about half an hour of that. No, I think we all have our tales we could tell about that.
I think that Facebook has shrunk the world. And, you know, there's so much sharing of photos and videos that people are starting to see through what I see as, you know, kind of the shilling of Alaska by the Alaska Convention and Visitors Bureau or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other, but the other side of that coin is you want a tourist track. I mean, you take, Hawaii is very good at this.
Yeah.
You know, here they have, like, just huge amounts, inordinate amount of tourists, and so they figured out all kinds of things to keep them busy so they don't get in the way.
I think tourism surpassed commercial fishing as an industry in Alaska quite a while back. Right. I seem to remember that.
Yes.
So we've been there, but I think what we're talking about today is not commercial tourism. We're talking about family visiting family. Sometimes the hardest thing for people to explain, or maybe sometimes you can't even explain. I remember taking Doug's, my husband's brother and his wife, and the four of us drove down, and as we were driving toward, I think we were going to take them to Portage or somewhere, but the goats were out. So we parked on the side of the road, and there were several cars parked there already. And we got out, and we were peering up, you know, at the goats. And this truck came by from the other direction, and he slowed down, we thought, you know, to be safe. But he really was slowing down so he could roll his window down and yell at us. And what he yelled was to all of us, he said, "Go back where you came from." And I remember being really mortified. And then the next second I was thinking, wait a minute, does he think I'm a tourist, or does he know that I'm native, and is he telling me to go back to the village?
Whoa.
Or what? You know? But what? my sister-in-law, Kay, she lives so far upstate New York that she's, you know, like 70 miles outside Montreal. And she took it as something that someone would yell to a tourist. And I mentioned that to her, and she said, "But I'm not a tourist." She said, and we kind of looked at her, and she said, "I'm visiting relatives."
Absolutely.
That's become a byword with my husband and I when we're down here. We're not tourists. We're visiting relatives.
Well, I think there really is a difference.
There is.
Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255. If you'd like to enjoy our join the conversation, Vernita Herdman is with us by telephone from Squim, Washington, but a lifelong Alaskan, really. And let's go to Roz, who joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Roz.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. First, I'd like to say to Vernita that I was just in Squim at the Lavender Festival. And it was raining, but well, I have been in Alaska about 3.5 years, and I've been in Anchorage. And so I've developed a little spiel that I use with people who make pretty dumb comments about isn't it this and isn't it that. And so what I say is, you know, Alaska is a very big state, and at any time there can be at least 30 different weather systems going on. And the stereotypical one that you're thinking of is the one that goes on in Fairbanks and Nome way up north. And in the winter, Anchorage is equivalent to Chicago.
Without the humidity.
Yeah, no, I think
exactly.
It's true,
very
yeah.
Very dry, exactly. And that seems to give people some perspective. I wanted to just add another little twist here if I could.
Please.
And that is, I have been here, well, I was here in the early 60s as well when my husband was in the service. And then I've been here this time 3.5 years. And I want to urge people that live in Anchorage and people that know the state to reach out to newcomers like me to go with them to other than the ordinary places, you know, and to, because I'd like very, very much to learn more about Alaska, but I haven't had an opportunity to go anywhere other than, you know, Homer, Seward, and I've been to Fairbanks and Chena Hot Springs, that sort of thing. But I'd like people in Anchorage to reach out to their neighbors or people like me that are really interested in going somewhere. I know I could probably just go somewhere by myself, but I'm not looking forward to that at the moment. But that is what I would like to throw into the pot here.
Thanks a lot, Roz.
You're welcome.
All right. It's 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email us talk at alaskapublic.org, of which we have a great many comments now coming over by email. Christine says, I've had several friends and family visit, and she was thinking about that wildlife checklist that I was complaining about earlier. Do people have all these things they want to see? She says, hey, I take them out to the Wildlife Conservation Center. They got most of those things there. they can check them right off. And she goes on. She's got a great list of things. And let's go to Jimmy. Joins the program from, Kenny Lake. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Oh, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Good morning, my friend.
Good morning.
Hey, Bernita's correct. A tourist needs to talk to some locals. By God, I'll tell you what, you'd be surprised, or they would be surprised at what you can learn. But besides that, I got one little funny story for you. Years ago, friends from Boston came up, and I took them around the state, just tooled around for about 10, 14 days. And everywhere we went, we met someone that I knew. By the end of the trip, they said, Jimmy, do you know everyone? I said, wow, I didn't realize that. Son of a gun, I guess I do. But they allowed me, if you talk to tourists, you get to see the place you really live in a whole different perspective. It's just amazing. But touristas should reach out and touch someone.
Great. Thank you, Jimmy. And that
right,
is
take care, man.
That is a really good point about knowing everybody. I was thinking about it. I know every governor of Alaska. I know most of the people that I even ever wanted to be governor of Alaska. it's just crazy.
Sometimes they're both.
Right. This one comes from Judy from Wasilla. Says that whilst flying back to Alaska from the lower 48, I sat down with a young lady in college who was coming up to Anchorage to visit an old friend for a few days. And guess what she wanted to see in December in Anchorage? An igloo.
No,
an igloo and three Alaskan bears.
Hey.
Yeah. Build your own. Kiddo, build your own.
Well, I always told people the only igloos that I ever saw, that I ever went into, and I'm native, I'm an Upek, the only igloo I ever saw in the 50s.
Oops. We may never find out. Vernita's phone just went out. We may never. Okay, let's go to Greg. Are you with us? Greg from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Great.
Good. I just think we should let people coming up here, you know to respect the state and to especially to respect the wildlife here.
Yeah. What does they often don't know what respect consists of, though.
Well, I know. That's really my point. My sister came up from Los Angeles. And we have, you know, we live out in North Pole. We had moose out in the front yard. There was a cow and a calf out there. And, you know, she was going to walk out there and take pictures of them. I thought, no, that's not a very good idea. You know, so we talked her out of it. But, you know, she was willing to just go right out there and try and stand next to them and take a picture. And, you know, people just don't realize that they're not pets. You know, they're wild animals, even though they're in your front yard.
Absolutely, and the Anchorage Daily News today has a picture on the front page from Juneau of people taking picture of a black bear cub, and any Alaskan, it just totally gives you hives. You think, where's the mom?
First thing I think of.
I know.
I appreciate it.
All right, thank you so much for your call, Greg. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255. What do our visitors need to know before they get here? I mean, we all know these various these various things that are put out to promote for tourism. But if it's a friend of yours who, or a relative, a family member, what can they be told that will prepare them for the experience they're going to have? Or are we even the ones that know? And by the way, Chris, Vernita, you still with us?
Mm-hmm.
Chris checked in with a question for you. Here it is.
What?
When you first visited Squim, what did you want to know about Washington's Olympic Peninsula? Did you inquire about the Sasquatch or Forks vampires and werewolves, or who the heck was Wanda Fuca?
Well, we've been here a year, and we've gone to Forks, not to look for werewolves or anything, but just for the drive. We're trying to find drives that are nice. We've been to the Lavender Festival, and I don't think, you know, we approached Squim as tourists because we moved here. We bought a house here, and so we've been discovering the Olympic Peninsula more as finding places that relate to the life we lived in Anchorage. For example, we were used to driving down to Seward to have lunch or dinner and coming back. And what I've discovered down here is long drives, especially with gas prices the way they are not on the menu for a lot of people. They're not used to it. People are very insular here. And they're surprised that we would drive to Forks or Nea Bay, which is like a, you know, hour and a half drive to have a sandwich. The other thing, who was it? Greg was talking about people wanting to interact closely with the wildlife. People do that here. My brother's in-laws have deer that live in the forest nearby, and they often come out and stand in the middle of the lawn and kind of indicate to the people that they're ready for their apples. And, you know, they just wait, and then Gary and Pat go out there and throw them their apples. The same people witnessed a bear, a black bear, giving birth to twin cubs in their yard last year.
Wow.
And people do interact with wildlife here. And so when they go to Alaska and they see a moose, what can they relate to except the deer that, you know, eat apples from humans? I was talking to someone over the weekend who said that his father could hand an apple to a deer down here. And I was trying to imagine that happening with a moose, and I can't.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I think you have to kind of have some experience with moose before you realize how. I mean, they just don't look all that dangerous.
They don't look that huge. And, you know, if a moose stood in your living room, you know, its head would be near the ceiling, if not touching the ceiling. People don't realize that. The other thing is, a lot of people don't realize the sheer geographic size of Alaska. The woman who talked about 30 weather systems was right. But they're so used to seeing, and we've heard this before, I'm sure, the little silhouette of Alaska down the lower corner of the weather map certainly doesn't do justice to the real overlay, which they should show, which, you know, would have from the Aleutian Islands to the Canadian border.
Yeah. We're talking with Vernita Herdman on Talk of Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Do you know a nonprofit executive or tribal leader who is at risk for job burnout? Nominate them for a Rasmussen Foundation sabbatical, which provides paid time away for personal renewal and growth. Go to Rasmussen.org for more information, but don't wait. Nominees must complete an application by October 1st. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Oh, man, I totally forgot this one. And Marian Nelson reminded me. She said, don't forget the milepost, still the Bible of the North Country Traveler. From Marian Nelson, former milepost representative on the Kenai Peninsula and longtime resident since 63. Boy, that's a fact. In fact, that's what I have actually mailed out a bunch of copies to people that have said they were coming here. The milepost is definitely a good one. Let's go to John. Joins the program from Delta Junction. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, John. Nope. Oh, we've lost John. Well, then, how about Tim in Sitka? Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tim in Sitka.
Hey, how are you doing?
Terrific.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I've just been working on my boat here in Sitka and listening to your program, and it inspired me to call because about 15 years I lived here in Alaska, and just a couple years ago I moved away to northern Norway. My wife is from northern Sweden, and what I find myself trying to explain about Alaska more than anything is, especially where I live now, where I live in a very similar setting, you know, fishing culture, a hunting culture, mountains, fjords, ocean, is all my Norwegian friends say, oh, Alaska must be a lot like here then. And I always find myself trying to explain to everybody I meet up there that, yeah, Alaska looks very similar to here. And there's a lot of other places in the planet that I've been to that looks like Alaska. But what we have here in Alaska is very unique. And there's not many places left it like it in the world. And we have this this concept of wilderness. We have, you know, we still have the large carnivores roaming around in our backyard just here in Sitka. You know, I'm sure just a kilometer away from me, there's a couple, you know, brown bears hunched in the forest somewhere. But we, you know, we have this unique lifestyle and this concept of wilderness that doesn't really exist in too many places left on the planet. And this is something I think that at least I try to find myself trying to explain to my friends in Norway or people who visit here, you know, when I happen to get into a conversation that, you know, looks are deceiving. We may look like, you know, a lot of other really beautiful places in the world, but, you know, in places like New Zealand and New Norway, you know, they have a similar landscape. It's not like that because we're a little bit of a step beyond. And the further you get beyond the population centers, for example, if you get out to the Aleutians, then you reach a whole nother level of wilderness, almost this beyond wilderness level. So that's all I wanted to add to that.
I think that's fantastic. It reminds me of the show we did on the anniversary of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, where they were talking about how they came up with the idea that is, let's have a spot, a really huge piece of the Arctic that nobody ever does anything to.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. No. That would. You know. Well, I'm sure a lot of people have different opinions about that, but I think that would be fantastic, just because, you know, we do, you know, as just human beings, we have this. We have this habit of wanting to tame everywhere that we live, and it is, in my opinion at least, it's great to have these places of pure wilderness.
Well, yeah, I mean the greatness of nature and the mystery of nature and all those sort of things that you know, can be subtle and unquantifiable and so forth like that, you just leave it alone.
just leave them alone. You know, I was just in Petersburg hauling my boat out, and we met two folks that had just done the sailed the Great Circle route for 2 years. You know, they left Washington, sailed to the South Pacific, to Tokyo, and then they came back through the Aleutians, then back to Kodiak in Southeast Alaska. And they were just so wide-eyed when I mentioned that I'd been to the Aleutians before, because they looked at me and they said, "Yeah, Southeast Alaska. To so many people, this seems like the epitome of wilderness, but if you get up to the Aleutians, oh boy." And you know, that, you know, it is so difficult to, as you said, to quantify or to explain this concept of wilderness, but most often you can just see it in people's eyes who have been there and experienced it.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot, Tim, for your being prompted to call from working on your boat in Sitka.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah. Hey, yeah, have a good day.
All right, thank you. It's Talk of Alaska. This is from Judy, who moved to Alaska 4 years ago. And by golly, Judy is still a tourist, what it boils down to. My husband and I try to fit in as many trips and experiences as possible. We've been to Fairbanks, Tok, Denali numerous times. Last year, we went on the autumn lottery on the road. We saw wildlife and Denali the mountain. The grizzlies got so near the car, you could hear them eating berries. Homer, our daughter's hometown, Juneau, Whittier, and we will keep on adding more trips and places. We hope to go on the Denali Highway yet this year. Good point. There's berry picking to be had right now up there. We first got exposed to Alaska visiting our daughter at the turn of the century when we came to see her at Christmas and she arranged a sled dog ride with us. We now know that cabin means no indoor facilities and isn't necessarily built of log. You've got to live it to know it. And ultimately, I think that's true. But what we're talking about is kind of the cross-cultural venture, the adventure of trying to communicate it if you've lived it and you want someone else to get some feeling for why you treasure it or, as Heather said, love it. Let's go to Peggy, joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Peggy.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
It's the first time I've managed to get on.
Well, that's great. You know, that people, you call early, you're going to get on. You call late, and you're going to run out of time.
Well, I called later than before. Yes.
Yep.
anyway, I was intrigued by the first call. I didn't tune in at the beginning, but the first caller who said that she was interested in going someplace besides Homer and Anchorage and Seward. Yeah. So I know a perfect place, but the thing is that she could get a guided tour somewhere too. But I know a place up halfway between Homer and Anchorage, where there's a forest cabin and a lake and a rowboat.
And you got to hike to it.
That would be my suggestion, but I know other people have many suggestions. But I was talked into coming up here 30 years ago, and I'm still here.
Peggy, I want to thank you so much for your call.
So I'll leave my phone number at your station.
Okay.
I don't want to just broadcast it over the. I'm not precious,
okay.
But I'm into. I'm understanding there's a lot of hacking going on. So if she wants to call me, it's a 5-mile hike uphill. But I'm a slow walker. I'm 76 years old. I
Whoa.
Hike a lot, and if she's into doing something like that, I'm up to it. But then there are many guide tours too.
All right, thank you so much for your call, Peggy from Homer. Vernita, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. It was so much fun.
Well, thank you. It's been fun.
I'm so glad that you volunteered to stick your neck out and help me through this one.
I just think, you know, when you look at visitors, whether they're family or friends that you love, I think you have to kind of assess them. And I've always agreed with one tourism bromide, and that is that Alaska is a state of mind.
Okay, we got to go. Thanks for me, Dina.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again is making the best decision for herself and her baby. The mother has a better chance of regaining health and energy between pregnancies, and her baby has a better chance of being born on time and at a good weight. Talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. There you'll discover local and worldwide news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.